Now, with the latest from the world of technology, this is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
Lots to talk about.
Tech Guide.
It's a very well-rounded product, combines great design, great technology, lots of excellent features.
Tech Guide.
This is why Samsung has seen a huge surge, why their profits are up.
Keeping you updated and educated, this is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is not an ultrabook. If you're looking for something small, slim and lightweight, then you need to look elsewhere.
Tech Guide.
Probably one of the most impressive little devices I've seen in quite a while.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Hello and welcome to Tech Guide, episode 116, the podcast that's designed to keep you updated and educated about the latest consumer technology. It's great to have you with us once again, and if you're joining us for the first time, welcome aboard. Thanks for listening and thanks for downloading. My name is Stephen Fenwick. I'm the editor of techguide.com.au. On this week's show, it's a good news and bad news week for Apple with record sales, bendy iPhones, and a buggy iOS update. We're going to take a close look at all of those. Plus, Samsung announces Australian pricing and availability for their latest smartphones, the Galaxy Note 4 and the Galaxy Note Edge. In the Tech Guide reviews, we're going to take a look at the new Navman MyView, which is a GPS and dash cam in one. The new BlackBerry Passport. Yes, they're back with a new device. And the TomTom Golfer to help players improve their game on the course. And we'll finish it off with the Tech Guide Help Desk. And it's all brought to you by Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi products. Lots to get through, so let's get started. Okay, well, Apple have been in the news for some good reasons and also for some not so good reasons. First of all, they kicked off the weekend. This was the weekend following the sale of the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus with a very positive announcement of record sales. More than 10 million iPhones were sold in the first 3 days in the Tier 1 country. So we're talking Australia, the US, UK and all those other countries who had the iPhone 6 from September the 19th. 10 million sales in 3 days. That includes the pre-orders. Probably up to 20 million by now. It's been a whole other week. So a cracking start to the week for Apple. But unfortunately, the news went downhill from there. It emerged early in the week that there were some users complaining that the iPhone 6 Plus in particular, the larger of the two iPhones, was bending whilst resting in their pockets. This got huge coverage across the internet, even made the TV news, and there were pictures of iPhones that had developed a slight kink. Now, Apple didn't comment straight away about this story. They did something later in the week, which I'll get to in a moment. But there was a whole uproar. All this hysteria is how I described it around the new iPhones and how these cases, and they were isolated cases, I should point out, got a lot of airplay. So I wrote on Tech Guide actually a blog about the whole thing, and I said, well, look, if this occurs in the natural use of your phone, if it sits in your pocket, no one can tell you what pocket to keep your phone in. And no one can tell you that that if it bends, that you don't have a problem. So if you've got your iPhone in your back pocket, your front pocket, your side pocket, however you like to carry your phone, and it bends in the normal usage, then you'd be entitled to a refund or an exchange. But if there were there, what was ridiculous was some video bloggers were actually conducting bend tests. One particular blogger grabbed an iPhone 6 Plus, which is, as I mentioned, the larger of the two devices, quite thin, quite a large surface area on the back of the device, and he was performing bend tests. And of course he bent the phone. It was an unusual amount of stress on the device. No way which could it be experience that kind of force in the natural use of the product. And for that matter, I could bend any smartphone. Give me your smartphone, I'll bend it by applying enough force, as this video blogger did in his video. At the end of the day, it was just cheap link bait, and that's all it achieved. It didn't really prove that the iPhone was particularly bendy at all. In fact, and this was Apple's next move, Apple decided to open up their testing labs. They chose a limited number of journalists who were given amazingly rare access to the company's laboratories at Apple headquarters in Cupertino, just near San Jose. So these journalists were allowed to actually witness the stress tests, the durability tests that the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus are put through before they are put on sale. And amazingly, the tests all included, some of them included bending the iPhone. There was a test that showed the iPhone being weight put into the middle of the device, actually bend and flex the phone. And in these tests, it actually it flexed and then returned to its original state. There were sit tests, so it simulated sitting on your phone in various surfaces, a hard surface, a soft surface, at an angle. There were also pressure tests as well, so pressure point tests where a particular amount of force, I think about 10 kilos of force, applied in one narrow spot on the phone. The three-point bend test, which I mentioned a moment ago, that applied 25 kilos of pressure across the front and the back of the device. So in 3 points, it was flexed so that the ends and then the weight comes down on the middle of the phone actually flexes and then returns to its original state. There was also a torsion test, and this is a test where the iPhone is actually twisted from the ends to ensure it can flex without breaking. Now, Apple, apart from this super rare access that was given to journalists, Apple also offered a rare comment. Their comment was the fact that of the more than 10 million devices that had been sold up at that point, it was early last week, they only received 9 official complaints about bendy iPhones, which when you compare that to more than 10 million devices, is a pretty low strike rate. But no doubt there was so much coverage of this because Apple, while they received the bouquets for producing great events and great products and having amazing launches, they've also got to take the buckets when these sort of things occur and given so much publicity. So it was that was the start of the week. The next part of the segment is going to talk about the good news and bad news about iOS 8. Now, if you want to see also those Apple, the tests, the laboratory access, you can check it out. There's a video and some images at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
All right, moving on to iOS 8, and it was the same story. Good news and bad news week for Apple. The good news was that iOS 8 was being adopted rapidly. After less than a week after release, iOS 8 was already installed on 46% of Apple's mobile devices. Before the release of iOS 8, 92% of devices were running iOS 7. So in less than a week, the number of iOS 8 devices were nearly half of all iOS products in the market. We're talking iPhones, iPads, and iPod touches. So huge start to the week. Apple customers normally adopt very quickly the new iOS 8 software because it's very easy to install. Unlike Android, where installation of updates come through the carriers, they're fairly staggered because they're all different companies using the same Android software and it's rolled out at all various times. Some devices may not even get the latest update. Apple's quite clear the devices that can run iOS 8, it's iPhone 4S and above, and the iPad 2 and above. So they're quite clear with that, hence the reason the upgrade path is so easy and therefore so popular. But good news aside, there was also a problem. So what had happened? The first update for iOS 8. So iOS 8 went out 2 days before the iPhone was launched. I think it was on September the 17th, our time. Probably early morning, September 18th, our time. But what had happened, Apple decided they needed to put out an update. There was some vulnerabilities through, I think, the third-party keyboards. There were also some concerns about linking the health apps to the health kit. So they decided to push out an update, 8.0.1. Now, what had happened here, this update, once it got out there, there were less than 40,000 iPhone users thought, I'm going to do this update. Now, the update had been out for around an hour when things started to go horribly wrong. Those who had updated this to 8.0.1 were finding that they were losing cellular coverage. Their Touch ID fingerprint reader no longer worked. So it basically turned their iPhone into an iPod. Apple, as I said, noticed this error and pulled down the update after about an hour. So they acted quite swiftly. In the interim, they did offer a solution. So if any one of those fewer than 40,000 iPhone users, out of more than 10 million, by the way, probably 12, 15 million by now, so 40,000 users had bricked their phone, let's just say, crippled their phone with this update, Apple actually offered a step-by-step instructions, which I've written about on Tech Guide, on how to restore back down to iOS 8 and get it working again. So that's 8.0.0. Again, Apple in the headlines for the wrong reasons with 8.0.1. But as I said, Apple acted quite swiftly here and issued an upgrade, the 8.0.2 upgrade, a day later. And that then resolved all the issues. So they even went so far as to issue an apology. And I'll read you the statement. They said about 8.0.2. They said, we have a workaround for iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus, 8.0.2. And for that's for the users who lost cellular service and Touch ID functionality after updating to 8.0.1. Then when they released 8.0.2, they did issue that apology. And also, obviously, the fix for what they did call, this is Apple themselves calling the bug within 8.0.1. Their statement the next day was, iOS 8.0.2 is now available for users. It fixes an issue that affected iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus users who downloaded iOS 8.0.1 and includes improvements and bug fixes originally in iOS 8.0.1. We apologize for inconveniencing the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus users who were impacted by the bug. They mentioned the bug word twice in iOS 8.0.1. So, if you, it is safe to upgrade. I've had a lot of people asking me, is it safe to upgrade to iOS 8? Of course it is. Now that 8.0.2 is out, if you're running iOS 7, you can actually go straight up to 8.0.2 with that latest update. So, no need to fear. The latest version of iOS 8 is here. If you want to read more about that, you can do that at techguide.com.au. Now, Samsung were also in the game last week. All the headlines were good and bad for Apple, but Samsung had some very positive news. They had an Australian launch for the devices that we saw at IFA in Berlin, and by those products I'm talking about are the Galaxy Note 4 and the Galaxy Note Edge, as well as a couple of other products, the Galaxy Gear S smartwatch and the Galaxy Gear VR virtual reality device. Now, let's start off with the Galaxy Note 4. Now, we spoke about them a few weeks ago. We did have a hands-on. There is one available at Tech Guide. That is literally my hands-on the product in those photos. The Galaxy Note 4, 5.7-inch screen, Quad HD Super AMOLED screen, with a resolution of 2560 by 1440, 16-megapixel camera, powered by a quad-core 2.7 gigahertz processor. It's a powerhouse. It's also got the famous S Pen, so that can let you draw on the screen. You can also use it as a bit of a mouse with this latest Note 4 version. It will go on sale on October the 29th, and it will be priced at $949, which puts it up there with the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus in a similar price range. Now, this is a larger screen device. The very popular Galaxy S5 is still available. It has a 5.1-inch screen. The Galaxy Note 4 has a 5.7-inch screen, so slightly larger screen than the iPhone 6 Plus. So a lot of people are discovering that actually Samsung were the pioneers of the larger screen device. They've had, this is the fourth version of the Galaxy Note. Apple's coming out with the iPhone 6 Plus just a couple of weeks ago. A lot of people are thinking, wow, how long have these phablets been around, the phone tablets been around? Samsung have been doing them for 4 years now. So Apple late to the party, but obviously produced a pretty good device in the 6 Plus. That has been the more popular device of the two, of the iPhone 6 and the 6 Plus. 6 Plus has dominated. But the Galaxy S4 continues to plow ahead. It'll be in market, as I said, October 29. and I'm sure will be a popular one among the big phablet users, the big screen lovers of the devices. Now, another in the Note family is going to be the Galaxy Note Edge. Now, this was also seen at IFA for the first time, and it is a unique product in the fact that it has a curved screen. That's right, it curves on the right-hand side. So rather than having a normal bezel on the other side, the right side of the screen, there is no bezel because the actual screen curves down and gives another little bit of space that you can actually interact with separately to the main screen. It is similar to the Note. It has an S Pen. It has a similar Quad HD Super AMOLED screen. Slightly smaller screen though, 5.6 inches. But that curve on the right screen allows you to use it as a dock. So you can see all your apps. It also can run like a ticker tape of all your notifications if you're, say, watching a movie. So a very handy extra screen, would you believe, the Galaxy Note Edge. Take a look at the pictures on Tech Guide. It's going to be priced at $1,249. That's the same price as a 128 gig iPhone 6 Plus. Very interesting pricing. It is spot on the same price as the Apple device. Thing is, though, the Galaxy Note Edge, I think you're paying here for new technology. There's sort of new technology tax built into this device. It's got 32 gig of internal memory, has got an expandable micro SD card slot. For your money, Apple gives you 128 gig built in with a 5.5-inch screen, which is 1.1 of an inch smaller than the Galaxy Note Edge. So these big boys, the Galaxy Note 4 and the Galaxy Note Edge, are kind of playing in the same category as the iPhone 6 Plus. Be interesting to see how they fare against one another. It's going to be released in late November. The Galaxy Note Edge. In fact, we are one of only a handful of countries that will receive the Galaxy Note Edge. It is going to those countries that perform well in the Samsung ecosystem, and Australia happens to be one of them. So it's going to be released in November 5 is the Galaxy Note Edge. So October 29 for the Note 4, November 5 for the Galaxy Note Edge. Moving along, the Gear S smartwatch. Now, this has a much bigger screen, 2-inch screen. It's going to go on sale in November. It's got a curved AMOLED screen. There is a hands-on at Tech Guide, as well as a story about the Australian availability. It's going to be priced at $449, which I think is going to be a kind of a similar entry-level price to the Apple Watch when it is released early next year. But the Gear S, this is the third smartwatch app Samsung has released to Apple's Zero. Apple will have one out in the market early next year, and it will obviously compete in the same sort of market as the Gear S. The beauty of the Gear S, it's got a larger screen, so large enough to actually type on, so that you can actually access a keyboard. It's also got voice recognition. It's also got its own SIM card slot. Thing is, though, that there is no way to have the same number on two SIM cards at the moment, something the telcos will no doubt be lobbied heavily about from Samsung. So imagine having your same phone number on the watch as well as on your smartphone, so that if they're apart, you can still make and receive calls. You can still make and receive calls on the watch when you're, say, out on a run or just down at the shops without your phone, so you're still not cut off from the rest of the world. Finally, with the Samsung, they've also got a new virtual reality device, the Gear VR. And VR, of course, is short for virtual reality. Now, it will provide an immersive experience. I tried this at IFA in Berlin. You wear them on your head like goggles, and the screen, it doesn't come with its own screen. The screen happens to be the Galaxy Note 4, so it pays to invest in. If you're investing in the Note 4, then the Gear VR is an added accessory. Now, there is specific content for the devices, so you do get that interactive experience, but the screen is supplied by the Galaxy Note 4, which has actually made the device a lot cheaper than people would imagine, because there's a BYO screen in the form of the Note 4. The Gear VR, which will also be released in November, is going to be priced at $249. Well worth checking out if you're a virtual reality fan, and I think it's crucial that there is content for this for the device, so that if content creators support it, I think this is going to be a very popular device indeed. So not only can you watch videos, you can even play games, lots of interactive stuff. I think there's an Australian shark, some shark content, some shark videos that will think you're swimming with the sharks. Definitely one to check out. You can read about all the Galaxy Note 4, the Galaxy Note Edge, the Galaxy Gear S smartwatch, and the Gear VR. You can read about all those products and look at all the pricing at techguide.com.au.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Finney.
Tech Guide.
The Tech Guide podcast is proudly sponsored by Netgear, Australia's number one Wi-Fi brand, and they've just released the Nighthawk X6 tri-band 802.11ac Wi-Fi router. It's the world's first tri-band router, as a matter of fact, the Nighthawk X6. Now, 802.11ac, the brand new version of Wi-Fi, up to three times faster, is actually on board the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus. So if you're thinking about or already purchased an iPhone 6 or iPhone 6 Plus, it will run up to three times faster when connected to your Wi-Fi network through the Nighthawk X6. Very worth checking out. But you just think for a moment, the number of wireless devices we've got in our home, it could be 5, maybe 10. Do I hear 20? Well, I've got even more than that. And if you find your devices aren't performing as fast as they should, whether they're wirelessly streaming or gaming or updating, it could be that your wireless traffic is congested and fighting each other for space, for network bandwidth. The latest router from Netgear eliminates that problem no matter how many people and devices are using your network. The Nighthawk X6 is here. And it's incredible. The X6 delivers a massive combined wireless speed of up to 3.2 gigabits per second. There's never been Wi-Fi like it. Even if everyone and every device in the home is streaming, gaming, working, playing, socializing, or updating all at the same time, the X6 won't miss a beat. So if you're looking for the ultimate in speed, range, and advanced features for your home network, upgrade to the Netgear Nighthawk X6 and get ready for the extreme. Check out the Nighthawk at netgear.com.au/Nighthawk X6.
Tech Guide.
Now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Fennick.
Tech Guide.
Okay, now on to our reviews. We've got some interesting products this week, and we're going to kick it off with the Navman MyView. Now, the MyView is actually two products in one. First of all, it's a Navman, so that means it's a GPS device. And secondly, on the back, you'll find a HD camera. So it's also a dash cam as well. So not only can you have GPS for navigation, you've also got a camera to record any on-road incidents. Now, dash cams have become a very popular product. They're normally standalone products. So it's one device permanently attached to your windscreen, a power cable also permanently attached, and the camera facing outwards, of course, and with sensors on board that can record any kind of incident. So if it detects a sudden change of movement, any kind of impact, then the HD video that it's constantly recording is then stored for later reference with a timestamp, location stamp, so that that video can become evidence if necessary for an insurance claim, a police matter. It can prove your side of the story. So if there is any protect yourself maybe against a fraudulent claim from another driver. So the MyView Drive on the camera side can do all those things. It's got a nice wide angle lens, 120 degree wide angle lens, so it'll capture everything in front of it, night or day, and has those built-in three-axis G-Shock sensors to sense that force or change of impact or direction, so that any of those detectors go off, it knows it needs to save that video because it's constantly recording. So if you get through a whole day and nothing happens, then that video is deleted, and then you start again, constantly recording. It's recording in different blocks, so 5-minute blocks at a time. If that 5-minute block is incident free, it dumps it and then continues to record the next 5 minutes. If it doesn't require it being saved, it saves it to the onboard 8 gig memory card, the micro SD card. So right out of the box, this is ready to use. Now on the GPS side, of course, it is a Navman. So you're going to get things like lifetime map updates. So you'll always have the latest maps. You get all the safety alerts when you approach red lights and speed cameras. You also get driver alerts ahead of, if say you're approaching a black spot or heavy traffic updates, it will give you an alert. So it will tell you if there's traffic ahead of you or a dangerous roundabout or a black spot, so handy to have in the car. There's also things like landmark guidance, so you can see, you can navigate by a building, so it might say up at the next left, make a left at the petrol station, so it can help you not only give you street names but also give you visual cues as well. You can also navigate to various points of interest. For example, you might need fuel, and it will tell you that to navigate towards a certain type of petrol station. You may be even looking for a certain type of fuel. You can even navigate by fuel type as well. Points of interest, you need to go to some shopping, need to go find an ATM, need to find parking. All those are on board as well. So well worth checking out. Also, if you're on the road a lot and you need to keep track of a logbook, the Navman MyView also has a digital logbook to help you record the miles that you've travelled, the kilometres you've travelled, I should say. One thing you need to remember, though, I think this needs to be constantly connected with the battery. So there's going to be a cable running down the screen. But look, you're getting navigation and you're getting a dash cam all in one. And it's priced at only $299. So I think not a bad deal. If you were to buy a GPS and a dash cam separately, you'd be paying more than $299. Or you can be smart and buy the Navman MyView Drive. $299 comes with a 2-year warranty. And if you want to read more about that, you can do it at techguide.com.au. Now, I'm just trying to think who, was it Mark Twain that said the rumours of my death have been greatly exaggerated? I could be wrong. I'll have to look that up. But anyway, you've heard that saying. The same really could be said for BlackBerry. The BlackBerry has been a brand that was once a mighty, powerful brand, has since really tapered down to a very small part of the market now, hanging on by a thread in some areas in enterprise, in corporate circles. But just when you thought the brand was dead and buried, but a whole new device emerges, the BlackBerry Passport. Now, to say this is not your usual mobile device, I think BlackBerry needed something way out of the box here, way outside left field, one outside the circle, let's just say. And they've come up with it, I think. The BlackBerry Passport has a square screen. So it's got a 4.5-inch high-definition touchscreen, resolution of 1440 by 1440. It is square. So it does look a lot different to a normal device. A normal smartphone, let's say an iPhone or a Galaxy S5, are a lot narrower. So the aspect ratio of the screen looks more like a cinema screen. This one looks more like an old-fashioned TV because it's square. But BlackBerry say they did that for a reason. They want to allow more screen space for mobile workers, mobile users. They can type out emails, browse websites, use maps with that screen. So it's been optimized for viewing those sorts of apps. But what's also included is a physical keyboard. Now, this is the signature feature that has kept most BlackBerry users in the BlackBerry ecosystem. They love that physical keyboard. It gives them an easy way to type. And that, I think, has been one of the sole reasons why BlackBerry stayed in the marketplace to begin with. So now that this is back, the BlackBerry Passport has an all-new keyboard. It not only has those physical QWERTY keys, but they've also got a responsive surface, so it can act like a trackpad as well. So you can move the cursor around the screen, navigate the menus, and also scroll web pages as well. The physical keyboard, according to BlackBerry's testing, is 4 times more accurate than the virtual keyboard on the previous model, the BlackBerry 10. BlackBerry 10 was an all-touchscreen device, had a very impressive virtual keyboard, I have to say, but the physical keyboard apparently has an error rate 74% lower. So physical keys beat virtual keys every time. If you want to check it out, it's got also a 3450 milliamp hour battery, so it should last you easily through the day. BlackBerry is saying up to 30 hours of mixed use. You want to check it out, I've put a side-by-side image of the BlackBerry Passport next to a regular smartphone so you can see the difference. You can also buy it already from the BlackBerry online store. There's a link and more information like pricing at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Finnick.
Spring is here, the weather's warmer, daylight saving's about to start. Now, these are magic ingredients I know for me personally, these are the months where I get out and start playing golf again. I'm a member at St. Michael's. If you see me at St. Michael's, don't laugh at my bad shots. Just come and say g'day. But it's about that time of year that I do get out on the course. And just in time, TomTom have released a product that I will be using to, I will be testing, and that is the TomTom Golfer GPS watch. Now, there have been watches from other GPS companies. We've seen them from Garmin. We've seen them from other companies, Golf Buddy as well. But TomTom now have produced their own version, the TomTom Golfer. More than 34,000 golf courses preloaded. All there. So if you take it overseas, playing in Hawaii or in the US or in Europe or anywhere in the world, it can detect where you're playing. Up to 34,000 golf courses in the database, so it can see where you're playing, the hole you're playing, and give you accurate distances to hazards, the center, front, middle, back of the green, layups, things like that. It's got GPS on board, so it can really pinpoint your location and give you very accurate information to help you make the right decisions in terms of clubs when you're playing. Now, it's another feature on board is called Green View, and as its name suggests, it gives you a look at the green. So not only will you see the shape of the green, where the pin happens to be that day, it'll also give you an idea of the surrounding hazards so you can work out your best approach to the hole. You can also do things like keep track of your score, you know, how many putts you've had, how many fairways you hit in regulation, you know, whether you've had a par, whether you've had a bogey or a birdie, whatever. Keep track of your score. It can also tell you how much, how far you've walked. So it's a pedometer as well, the distance you've walked. And it also, it's a timer, so it can tell you how long it's taken to complete your round. Handy tools for your average golfer. Not too bulky. It's pretty light, actually. It's very comfortable to wear, so it's not out of place on your wrist. You can easily walk around 18 holes, and right there on your wrist, you got all the information that you need. It's weather and water resistant too, so even if you're playing in the rain, the TomTom Golfer is going to be okay. It's going to be released in late October, and it's priced at $299. It's a bit cheaper than other watches on the market. This is purely a GPS device. We have spoken earlier about the Garmin, which also has a swing coach and a tempo guide. That is a little bit more expensive. The TomTom Golfer, pure GPS watch, and if you want to check out what it looks like, there will be a full review at Tech Guide in the weeks ahead, but there is a report now outlining the features and also giving you a look at the device. You can check that out at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
Okay, the Tech Guide Help Desk this week. Interesting question I got from one of my readers on the forum, and their concern was they're changing Android phones and were wondering how they were going to back up their apps. Well, I've got some good news. If you've got a Google account, usually you create it with a Gmail account, or if you've got any other Google products, sign in with your Google address and password. And whenever you sign into a new Android device, that is the case. And you'll find that the apps linked to your account will follow you to your new device. So no need to actually save them. You can just download them again. Even if you've paid for a particular app, your Google login will remember that and just let you download it to your new phone. So no need to save the apps. If you've paid for it once, Google will remember on your new device because you've signed in with your profile. So you will know. Some phones even update all those apps automatically. So I find whenever I review a new Android device, I pop in my Google address and password, and I find that there's all these apps that are downloading by themselves. Some need to be given approval to download as well. But a lot of them update themselves. So good news is you don't have to back up the apps. Let Google do that for you. You're listening to Tech Guide. And that's our show for another week. You can read more about everything we've talked about at techguide.com.au. We'd also love to hear from you. So if you want to send us an email, info@techguide.com.au, or head to the forum on the homepage, post your question. Either myself or some of my readers will do our level best to answer that question. A special thanks to our sponsors, Netgear, the brand you can trust for all your Wi-Fi needs. If you want to stay connected, the answer is Netgear. Thanks for listening. It's been great having your company. And we look forward to you joining us again next week. So until then, stay safe and stay connected.